everybody. My name's Mark Glover. I'm the editor here at SHP, and welcome to the Safety Conversation. Today, I know, is going to be a really good one. I'm chatting with brilliant Jason Enko of Proud to Be Safe, which is scarily coming up to its 15th birthday. So we kind of thought it would be an opportunity just to sort of reflect on things and talk about the profession and talk about the business and where the business is going. And we've also got Abby on the podcast as well from Proud to Be Speakers, who's going to be talking about the evolution of that really and how that's come about. Hello, Jason. Thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for the invitation to come and speak to you on a chat. We're really looking forward to it.
I alluded to it then. You know, most people are sort of aware of your story. You've done a lot of talking about it and kind of the effect of it and how you've come through that and what you've learned from it. And, you know, it's a story that we continue to reflect on and look at. But, and I think importantly, how you sort of used it to help other people. But really, you know, it happened 30 years ago. This is a podcast, I think, on reflection. So when you do look back, how different, if you can see, how different is the attitude to health and safety 30 years ago when you did have your accident, and now in 2024, is it really different from what you recall and what you're doing now?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously things have massively improved, and the old appetite for safety, I think, has finally changed. You know, back in 1993, when I had my accident, you know, safety standards were just like turn up on site in your trainers, jeans. It was pre-PPE even. You know, I can remember when, you know, after my accident, PPE started coming onto the scene. People was really moaning, really anti-PPE. It was going to get in the way, slow the job down. Vessels were crap, gloves were rubbish and all this. So you've seen the evolution with just the quality of PPE. You know, let's start from the sort of bottom of the basic sort of safety things we have in place. But, you know, we see the quality of PPE today. It was amazing. And to be fair, I don't often speak on sites anymore, which I used to all the time, like in building sites, sports cabins. I don't really do that anymore. But when I do speak, you know, at a venue, you often find, me and Sean, when we're working, often laugh that you see people come in with their safety glasses on and don't even take them off. You know, because they're so good today. You know, all these, you know, things in the past were rubbish. So look at the real basic thing, you know, the first line defence, your PPE. The improvement of that is really good, and the quality has encouraged people to wear it. I think it's one of the same old things. Once people accept something, they just accept it. There's resistance, obviously, with anything. So
change.
But change that. So hopefully now people are starting to, you know, lose that sort of resistance and realising safety is there for a reason. You know, you just hope by looking at the stats, you know, in one way, I still feel like, you know, it is quite alarming, and we'll move on to some of the things we're doing about it. But you look at the stats around deaths per year over the last sort of 30 years. Yeah, they've come down, but not as much as I would like to have seen. Now, I started speaking 15 years ago, so about 16 years after my accident. You know, obviously now I'm more aware, regularly interested in, you know, the yearly reports of deaths and injuries. And yes, there is obviously a downward trajectory, get the words out, but not for me as much as it should be. So that we've hit like a piece of resistance on fatalities, which I think something is quite alarming. And yet, hopefully, some of the injuries, you know, the eye injuries and stuff like that, maybe has come down because of the level of eye protection. And more acceptance, people now wear eye protection in certain areas. They'll put a mask on in certain areas because it's just like they've accepted it. And I think it's always that, what is the level of resistance where people are saying, hang on, I'm like, I don't want to do that. And that's when you have that barriers, and that's where you know, that's why the talks that Ari provides at Proud to Be Safe, all those speakers, hopefully can show the cost implications of not wearing the correct equipment. I know we start the real basic ones of PPE, but that with all the equipment, don't it? You know, working on that equipment. You know, I was very fortunate to go to a lot of trade shows and things like that. And you see the level of equipment year on year, the progression, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's big business, isn't it? It's a big set when you go to those trade shows. I'm really interested in how you went, your journey, and how obviously what happened and what you've had to go through and come through. What was the point when you went, I'm going to talk to people about this.
I'm the most reluctant person to be asked to speak and present. It was 2008. I'd gotten compensation finally in 2007 after a 14-year battle to get it. And I was still in a pretty bad place. I was drinking quite a lot still. I was holidaying all the time. I'd been in Tenerife like for a couple of months at a time, come home and come back on holiday. Yeah. And then the crash happened in 2008. I lost a lot of money in the crash with the investments we've made and with my compensation. So I was looking to do something. I was going back into sign writing, my job I loved. And I set up a little workshop thing. I'd do that, turn a little money. And then it was literally a drunken conversation. It couldn't have happened any more surreal. I shortened the story in the presentation because of the time, but basically I was given a card of somebody from Dan Terry, who was working with Ian Whittingham, or supposedly Ian Whittingham was obviously a big safety speaker.
Yeah.
And it was when Ian had just started to take poorly. So Dan had turned up at a place not far from where I live, supposedly to speak with Ian. Ian was poorly. Yeah. So it was literally Dan in the tea room talking to a guy about, this guy was supposed to come to in a wheelchair, talk about working at night. Mm-hmm. And this guy said, oh, I know somebody down my street who had an accident falling off a ladder. And it was literally a business card passed over to me. And I received it in a pub one night, drunk, woke in the morning, went through my scattered change on the side, trying to figure out how much I'd spend. And saw this business card, this guy called Dan Terry. And I don't know, it's just something why not?
Yeah.
Why not have a chat? And he took me on a job to online onshore oil platform, it was. And I got in this room with all these roughnecks. And I sat back in the room and Dan did his bit and he said to me afterwards, what do you think? And I said, oh, I don't know. And he said, I'll leave you a couple of weeks. And he rang me. He said, what do you think? I says, it's a big no from me. I'm in Tenerife. I'm not doing it. I can't do that.
Yeah.
And then I came back and he left me a bit, made contact again, took me somewhere else. And one thing I planted this guy to say, he made me speak. I just put me on the spot, speak for 5 minutes about your accident. I did. And one guy just says, that was the most impactful thing I've ever heard. Now, Dan, sorry, he's passed away now, Dan, but knowing Dan as well as I do, I believe he planted that guy to say that to encourage me to think. And that was the moment I thought, you know, it was a thing of moments. If by sharing my story, if I could prevent that happening to one person, it was like, I think they have a choice. I have to do this. That was a start. And anyone who knows my story start, I was very nervous, very angry still about my accident. So there was a lot of swearing. I was angry. It was all about blaming other people, blaming the boss, blaming them, blaming everybody else. And it was a really angry story. And then I spoke at, this was really the biggest break ever. I spoke at the IOSH, was doing an event in London. And they asked me to speak. You know, this is me who spoke with somebody, always there as a support, but by myself in front of 250 people. So I wheeled on stage, absolutely terrified, you know, what my. I couldn't eat the day before. We went for a nice meal. They took me out for a meal. I couldn't eat because I was like nervous. And I got on stage and I sort of did it. You know, all the, you know, it just sort of came out. And because it was very raw and people see how I was really struggling to share the story, it sort of helped me because people
genuine.
Could see. Yeah, yeah, it was dead genuine. And from that, obviously, Outtakes was there, the film people who spotted me there. They approached me and said, oh, we love your story. Why don't you make a film? Which again was a catalyst really for getting my story out there. Because all of a sudden, you know, it was this guy. Well, Outtakes, you know, took a chance for me, made a film about me, and you know, the sort of the rest is history. Really,
history. It must have. Yeah, something completely out of your comfort zone, isn't it? I mean, you've obviously been through it, but it's also quite sort of must be satisfying on a number of levels. A, personally, what you've achieved in speaking to a massive audience of 250 people. Yeah. And then I guess like added on to that, you've got genuinely making a difference and stuff. Yeah. And then did you kind of think at that point, okay, this is where I'm going?
Yeah. To be fair though, it wasn't. There's what, and I do still talk about this on the presentations. There's one moment, it changed everything. I was doing a presentation somewhere. And this is when I was still in a quite nervous stage. Am I doing the right thing? Are people listening? And sometimes we enter on construction sites. Because of the nature of the work and the tired, you get people sort of drifting off to sleep. And because I just get really self-conscious. Anyway, on one particular day, the guy was sat on the front row. And he was like, you could say he was really struggling to listen. Oh, I realise now, I thought he was just going to sleep, but he was really struggling to listen. And I think my story was very edited back then. I didn't say certain things. I held back a little bit. And it was also there moments where he wasn't listening properly. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to have to tell him everything. So I started mentioning incontinence, leg bags, sex, everything that came out of the artillery was there. And he'd like, when I finished, he came to me and shook my hand and just said, I get it now. And I think in that moment, that's when I got it. By me sharing my story, my hardships, if I then can prevent it happening to one person, then it's worth continuing. That's enough. Yeah. One person in the room takes something away. That's one person's family. And all those, you know, the ripple effect, which I talk about to this day, they're the unknowns. You know, you see all the stats of the accident victims, you know, so many of this, thousands of this, 150 people that. That's what you hear of a story. That's not a reflection of how many people have been affected. I'll be able to speak, like, you know, if you have time. Abby now speaks, and when she speaks, she talks about her granddaughters. You know, it's like the ripple effect of a generation wasn't even born. I feel the effects of a choice that I made 31 years ago on the construction site.
Well, that's a good, that's, you know, it's probably a good point, actually, Jason, and thanks for sharing. That's really interesting. I'd like to talk about Abby, and Abby, I'm conscious you're there in the background as well, but I just, and you mentioned the sort of ripple effect within a family, but and not you know, to get perhaps too heavy, but how important, you know, Abby, which we'll come on to a bit, has sort of been an integral part of the company as well, and taking things forward, and we're going to talk about that a bit later on. But it feels a bit of a cliche question because the answer is obvious, but how important has sort of Abby's relationship been with what you've been through? You touched on grandchildren there and stuff like that, and I'm sure you've been asked it all the time, but I think it's still really important.
Yeah, it is. I mean Abby had a good job at the bank, and she started, as I got busier with all the paperwork, asked Abby to help me out part-time a little bit, and it worked with him. And I got to the stage where I thought, I need someone full-time, and it was like, Abby, why don't you leave your job, your very nice job at the bank, you know, we might get promoted and all this, why just come work for me?
It was like, for your dad.
And to be fair, she didn't. She's never looked back. And it's great. I mean, Sam initially came with me to speak, and Sam's, you know, we realised that Sam was probably affected by my accident. Not so much by my accident happening. I was in a wheelchair. So I don't think any of the kids actually realised I was any different. I was just always dad in a wheelchair. But when you realise it's the things you can do with certain kids, you know, and Sam sort of really struggled a little bit, and he quite worked me a little bit. Hopefully he will do in the future again. But yeah, my relationship with Abby and the business is like, well, she's a boss now, you know, and we'll quantify why when that sort of went down a different track working with Tim Marsh and left Abby to look after the business. And really, Abby's role was to just to get me work, manage my diary, and that was sort of Abby's role. And you know, and what she's grown it into is like quite mind blowing for me, really.
Abby, do you mind? Can I bring you in if that's all right, Abby?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for coming on. Jason was just saying, I kind of want to, what I was saying a bit earlier, was taking up the reins or working with your dad, if you don't mind me saying, was it in any way therapeutic for you as well? Did it help? Because obviously what you had to go through was that, obviously, as well as what the sort of work that Jason's doing, but you're a pivotal part of that. Do you take any, does that help, if that's not
massively.
A strange question?
I mean, when I do speak, when I go on my own, I sort of say that. So for us growing up, it was never spoken about. So what, and because of the way Dad was, I never felt like I could approach him and ask him questions. Or so actually when he started doing these sessions and I went to watch him, which would have been one of the first ones, I think I was about eight, so about 2008 2009, just got back off holiday, and I went straight from the airport to watch him at an event, and I cried the whole way through, because I was listening to actually what he had gone through, but then sort of like made sense what we had all gone through as well. So every time, even now when I watch it, I struggle, even though half the time I know what he's going to say. But I think I take certain different things each time I listen. And obviously he shares more each time he feels able to. So, yeah, absolutely. It's been like therapy, ongoing therapy, I would say.
Yeah. That's a really good point. You know, we're a nation of not speaking sometimes, aren't we? It's very easy just to get it all down and get on with it. And to have it out there does help, doesn't it?
Massively. And I think Because we're on our own personal journey as well. We've got a life coach that Dad recommended to me. And when Dad actually recommended it, I sort of dismissed it like, I don't need that. And the first conversation, I was like, oh my God, yeah, maybe I do need to talk to someone. Because there is a lot. And that's just me completely dismissing it. So, yeah, speaking out and just sharing helps massively.
Brings you nicely on, Jason, to like a bit about about mental health, really. And I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on one of the things that I guess might have helped to bring in more awareness recently in reflection is the pandemic and sort of post-pandemic, and a lot of people getting going, crikey, I'm out of control. This is full on. A lot of people realizing about anxiety and kind of it's out of control and there's nothing I can do here. And I wonder what, in your experience and what you've been working, if you've seen a shift around post-pandemic time. Have you seen people's attitudes change even more?
Yeah, massively. So I'll go back to up to 20, 2016, 2017, where, I started realizing there was more about my house than just speaking up. That was the old aimless, get people to speak up about safety, that solves everything. And there was always something in the back of my mind thinking, yeah, I was young when I did my accident, I didn't speak up. And what was the reason? Peer pressure, young, all those things did play a part in why I chose not to speak up. I always knew. No, there's something else. There's something stopping me from doing what, why I didn't speak up. I knew it was unsafe. I stopped. I thought about it, realized the job was unsafe, and I still did it. And it was that realization then, the way I felt around the time of my accident must have been a reason why I chose to ignore my safety concerns. Just get it done. That was my attitude. Oh, just get it done, be all right. And then obviously with Tim being a bit of a mentor, I went to see Tim one day in Manchester.
His
I said, yeah, Tim Marsh, Professor Tim Marsh, give me his proper title. Always been a confident man anyway. I went to him, I said, look, Tim, I'm bringing a bit of well-being to my presentations. And to be fair, I'm getting a bit of kickback. People are saying, oh yeah, we do mental health. We've done just that. We've done a bit. I just talk about your accent, talk about falling off the ladder. We're not interested in that sort of bit. And I was a bit like, well, I think this is quite important because it's like, realizing how well-being affects safety choices. And I went to meet Tim, obviously, and I said, what do you think? And he said, oh, I've got a better idea than that. He says, why don't we work together? He says, because that's what I want to specialize in. It's the whole thing. When from that, it's like me now understanding why I had my accident has completely calmed me down. I'm a different speaker today. I tell my accident story in a couple of sentences, as in I fell flat on a building site. There's no point in me analysing what I did and going through because people know what they should do with working height, especially. This is more about the impact, and then goes into understanding why I did what I did, and understand that my mental health, that was a main contributed massively to my accident. I wasn't eating properly. I got marriage problems. We got debt issues. I was drinking too much. I wasn't sleeping properly. Turned up to work with no pack up. Just the list goes on and on and on and on. So for me, when I speak today, people ask me all the questions around the well-being, what are you at your mental health, how do you manage your mental health today? And I go back to 1993. If I spoke up, stop my ex from happening without a doubt, I must always speak up. But if I spoke up or someone prevented me from climbing out at the end of shift, I still went home to a pub. I got him late. My marriage problems have still been there. I don't suggest the next day. I say probably a week or two later, I've been back in that place where I was taking shortcuts, doing them things because that's the way my mindset was at the time. And I think what the pandemic did, it speed up the process because we was Anton was banging the drum and people was going, no, just do what you normally do. We like what you normally do. Why are you in this? Why are you in this arena? It's not, And now all of a sudden, the pandemic hit. And we say a good positive for us and for wider society is people have finally recognised there is a connection between well-being and self-safety. I mean, for me, I personally, I put well-being around absolutely everything. You can have the greatest systems, procedures, do mental health training, do behavioural safety training, do the cultural survey. That for me, well-being just fits around the whole thing. It has to be a part of everything. It's more than safety. It's production, it's quality. If you want a successful business to make profit, you need your people to be in a good headspace. And go home safe has always been the motto. Let's send people home in the same way they arrive in the morning. Well, I'm a big champion. I said, nobody needs to raise the bar. Well, what if someone comes to work in the morning in a pretty bad place with problems at home, and yet have a great proactive day at work where he's valued and supported by his supervisor, his boss. And surely companies should aim to send people in better, because that's the goal. Because we'll just stay where we are. You know, always think, what can we do next? Let's aim to make people have a nice experience at work. And Tim uses a great quote. He says, there might be someone in your workforce, and we're doing a presentation in the room, who's got suffers with bipolar or schizophrenia, one of the real bad ones, and yet he's eating properly, sleeping properly, he goes to the gym, he talks openly about his mental health, takes his medication properly, keeps hydrated. He's probably in a better mental state at work than some other people who are sat there who are not eating properly, on the energy drinks, drinking loads of alcohol. You know, do you know what I'm trying to say? So it's like,
100%.
So that's it for us. You know, I think what you go back to your original question, the pandemic has really helped us get to this place where companies are actually going, oh yes, we now want to speak to you about this part. So it's probably why we're so busy. You know, it's probably why Abby's booked up with speakers with proud to say, because that's a great starting point. We say it all the time. It's a bottom down, top up approach. It has to be. You engage your workforce with these motivational speeches. You come down from the top, get the management on board as well. And then that's it for me. And it's like, but everybody's in this. It's not about a worker having a bad day. What if the manager's having a bad day? You know, what if he's having a bad day? Then surely it's down to his supervisor. I say, are you okay? Is everything okay? And I think this whole well-being thing, finally, it's gathered momentum. And I think the only resistance in the safety world can be that some people who have had a mindset for so long, you know, sort of people of my age and older, can feel a bit challenged by this new breed of this well-being. So I'm all for all these things of safety. I'm not saying well-being is a new thing, that's all it is. I saw a post on LinkedIn last night, what should we call it? I think it should be well-being, health and safety. My thing is well-being should be first. It should be well-being, health and safety. And that's what we sort of champion. It's like, and then with the expertise of Tim now, and that's what we do. We can help people, help companies achieve that because it has to. It's about, you know, and then you see the recent stats on some of the surveys that the actual cost of ignoring this.
Yeah.
So once the money people realise for every pound you spend on well-being, I think the exact fee was like £4.61. Yeah. It's basically £5.
Yeah.
That's an investment. So you're going to get that back in productivity, staff retention, all those things that are even more important today with the limited workforce that we have in recruiting staff, keeping staff, which is a massive problem. So just create a nice place to work.
Yeah.
I know your systems, your rules, safe things all in place, but just create a nice place to come to work. And you often find, when I ask the question, if you're in a bad place, are you more likely to follow the rules or break the rules? And also, if you're in a good place, are you more likely to follow the rules and break the rules? And I think that the answers are quite obvious, isn't it? That the worker who's in a good place is more profitable, his production's better, and his safety's obviously better. It's like the safety should... As Tim said to me the first time we had this meeting, safety should take care of itself. And I was like, what do you mean? But obviously, when you think about it, we get it all right. So we've got the right equipment, the right planning, everything's in place. It should take care of itself.
Yeah.
Obviously, making sure the worker's in the right fit place to come to work. And if you are suffering from any kind of issues, be in a workplace where you can share them. Now, if I come to work in the morning and say, do you know what, I've had no sleep last night. For whatever reason, I'm in a really bad place. Do you really want me as a banksman on a construction site? We're not saying this is the answer. It's definitely not the answer, but I think it forms a massive part of what people need to do. And if people are scared, it's like anything new which challenges what you've always thought. Some people are scared of it, so they'll just revert back to what they've always done. So that's saying, do what you've always done, and you get exactly the same results. So, if we want to achieve less accidents, if we want to achieve all these things, then we have to look at something, something slightly different.
Brilliant. Well, I knew this would be a good conversation. And it's a shame we can't talk for hours more. Perhaps we should do a series next time of these cases. There's so much to get into. There's so much I've taken from that about attitudes, about how much it should, because we get a lot of resistance sometimes from readers who say it shouldn't be part of the general profession it should sit with HR. And I know I'm going down a rabbit hole here, and I won't push it too much, but that's part of the battle. And I think you used a really good word. It's a challenge, though. So a bit people are a bit sort of perhaps scared of what that means, because like unlike the other side of unlike safety, which is sits nicely in a framework, like Tim's alluded to, you can tick that off. I'm comfortable with that. That's wrong. Tick. There's no. It's so broad, isn't it? You can't put well-being in a rigid case. It won't, because it. We know it won't, and it's just sort of trying to tell people it's okay that you know it's all right to have worries about how to handle this, about how to speak to an employee who might come in looking hungover. It's all right to say you're okay, but it's a big shift, and
Do you know what, Joe? I'm like, Joe, I feel I'm vindicated by these thoughts, because obviously I do a lot of presentations. I think when you do cultural surveys and all these things to get the measure of people, I call my presentation a health, safety, and wellbeing presentation. So my accident story is in there, the implications of my accidents is in there, and then the wellbeing piece. And I end up by I'll turn my life around and say, and I'll build back me up. This last 6 years, since I've been on my wellbeing journey, the last 6 years, my life has completely changed. Now, after my presentations, historically, I'd have loads of questions around. I fell for like 20 years ago, I got away with it. All those sort of questions. Now, there's no emphasis on anything's any stronger. It's safety, the implications, well-being, right? At the end of my presentations, I never get asked one question around safety. When someone comes up to speak after this privately, it's always around well-being. I had a great one in Scotland from one of the ship workers who came back. He's probably in his mid-60s, came back after a week's presentation, was there a few days, and he said to me, I listened to your presentation last week. I think I suffer from anxiety. And that's from a 65-year-old guy working in a shipyard in Glasgow. He's on site every day, in obviously a bad place. So what sort of work is he making? It's that obvious question. And it can follow all the rules, but he'll be working slower. He'll be making a few more mistakes. And we all know
Risk
eventually,
environment as well, Jason. There's more, there's a lot
And
of
when you're
risk
making
there.
mistakes, 99 times out of 100, you'll probably get away with it. And you're not sometimes not even reported. So it's not on the stats anywhere, but it's that one time when it all lines up on the triangles and Swiss cheeses, whatever you want to look at it. It's one time it lines up, and all of a sudden the guy's lost a finger or lost a hand. And
Always.
everyone's saying, where's this come from? We've had an accident like this for years. Where, how all of a sudden we've got our guy falling off. We had three work height incidents in the last 6 months. And so now you've always had near misses. You've just not been reported. They just come along all of a sudden. You've always been having them. It's just now you've been fortunate that people have actually,
Yeah, absolutely. And at what point do you think maybe that people will put it together and go, "Oh, we've had three moments, and wow, we looked into it, and all of those people might have anxiety, or one of them was suffering. He was a bit hungover for a couple of weeks. And I wonder if there was stuff going on." And then, I mean, it's
We
that's what it
call it, I
comes
mean,
down to.
obviously, I'm not saying we're not on air. We call it the epic moment, don't we? That's what the term we use. It's some great success. We're using it, Tim's using it. I use it on my presentations. And what we find is we ask people, just think back to the last time you did something stupid. Did you utter them words to yourself just before you did it? And they all go, yes, I did. I actually said them words to myself just before I do. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? If we can capture moments where we go, I'm using this word now, when something's sticky and sticks in your mind. So for us, the effort moment is that sticky moment. We go, I've just said that word again. So what I'm going to do now is not right. It's taking it beyond 5 seconds. Take five, but think to yourself, what am I saying in my head? And if I'm saying them words in my head now, I know what I'm going to do next is not right. So it's like we've got to create this thing where people go, no, it's not right. And I think we hit on this word, and we sometimes have to be careful where we use it. But it's that moment where somebody goes, yeah, I did that. I've done that. So
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. But what I'm actually really interested in the evolution of Proud to Be Safe, in which you've been pivotal behind, but also in terms of this new sort of speaker area that you've been into since 2023. Proud to Be Speakers, sorry, just to
Yeah,
get that out there.
so obviously Proud to Be Safe has always been safety and well-being, and we do have some health speakers now too as well. But these new speakers we've sort of that we represent, we've met them at events, well, either me, Dad, Jason or Matt Hazelton. So we've seen them all in action and we've seen the value and the impact that they have. And sort of because we're always trying to progress and look to how we can help more of our clients or help more reach more people and learn different stories, not just around safety, but there's a variety of topics that we cover. So that was one thing. I mean, we're not an agency. We're just sort of a team of like-minded individuals that are all wanting to help others.
Yeah, make a difference.
Yes. The Proud of Speakers come about because we thought new ideas when a client comes to us. In the past, it's been, which we still do that and that's fine. They come and say, we've just got a speaker slot. But actually, recently we've delivered whole events and roadshows for clients. So that's where we sort of envision this going. So a client can come to us and say, I don't know, we want a day around leadership or culture or still safety and well-being. And we would be able then to provide them with speakers on a variety of topics, delivering sessions or workshops. We've got consultants, actors that can facilitate scenarios, and then even team building exercises like Lego and glass walk, or even a firewalk. we can work really closely with a client from the very beginning, make sure that their key messages and content's all aligned with what they want to get out of it. But it's quite exciting for us that we don't just send someone out and that's it. We can actually build a complete day from start to finish. So yeah, really, really, really exciting for all of us.
It sounds good, Abby. I think, as you say, it sort of sounds like it, health and safety, and then health's getting a bit more complex, isn't it? So you can't just put up a speaker and say this. You have to listen to what people want.
100%. And I think as well, as much as each of our speakers are fantastic and they all have a great, again, I wouldn't just send Jason. It depends on what the work, what they actually do, what they want from the session, who I would think would fit the event best. But again, you don't want to just listen to five safety stories of how things go wrong and impact. You have to have a variety on the day to take all different learnings from it. So yeah, it's really, really, really great. And it's everyone we work with is so lovely. So my job on a day-to-day is, I love my job. It's brilliant. Cool.
I assume people just go to the website. I'll put it down in the show notes so people can see. But if people do want to sort of have a curated day, or do they just literally get in touch and they can email? I mean, go to the website, basically.
Everything's on the website. So all the speakers are listed on there with video clips and things on there too. And then we have some example days that we've ran as well. They can get in touch and give us a brief, a budget, and we can go from there.
Do you know what, Abby? I'm coming to the final question. I've got a final question for Jason, but I think I'm going to ask this one to you as well. And I'm sorry, this is off the cuff, but you're an integral part of this whole thing as well and what you've done. But what inspires you to do what you do? You sort of mentioned there about working with people and stuff and seeing the impact that you made. Is that the kind of thing, or is it bigger than that? What you're doing, than perhaps working in the bank that Jason was saying?
Yeah, I think for me, when Dad asked me to come and help, initially I was like, yeah, I can do that. And then when I started to sort of get the feedback and see what he was doing, I was like, this is brilliant, like I need to be part of this. And then we sort of met other speakers. So we met Paul Blanchard and Lisa Ramos and then Matt Hazelton and Tom. And it was just, and I'm still on my journey of finding what my purpose is, but part of me at the minute that drives me is getting these, helping people share their story. So that's where that drives me every day, and the feedback we get, and it's very humbling for me to sit and listen to them talk, but then also hear the impact they have.
Great. Also, it's great for me to see these people grow personally themselves, from when they reached out to sort of Abby or me or whatever it was, and said, look, I'm thinking about speaking, and we met these people. Like, I use Matt for example. Matt was broken when we met him. Matt Hazelton was a broken man. You know, to see where he is today, and feel like in some ways we've just helped him along a little bit to change his life. It's humbling. It's just humbling to do. And it's like young Tom Caulfield. It's like where he is now. It's like just when we met him, to what he is now. He's come a young dad. It's heartwarming to see. You know, it's not just about this side of it. We, Abby's very passionate. This is a family. It feels like a family. We all reach out to each other. It's just a great, great thing. And I'm sure the party speakers she set up now will be exactly the same. But for me, it's just like it's just really humbling and proud. See what Abby's achieved from what I gave her brief to do for me, and she's grown into something that's occasionally she'll ask my opinion or my help, but that's only occasionally. I just sort of go with it now and see what she does.
Brilliant. Yeah. I think you've got an ethos, haven't you, really? The whole company, the whole, not to use the word brand because that sounds clinical, it is a sort of family, isn't it? And it's an ethos that comes across, and it's genuine what you want to do.
It's not a disparage on English speak, it's really not, but some people just don't fit for us. It's not, you haven't got a good story, you're not good speakers, and we're not saying we're not bad or anything like that. Just for us, for sometimes, certain speakers don't fit into our families. It's so hard. It's not a disparage on them at all. It really isn't, but it's just for us. But we are a family, and that's how we are. It's how we've always been. I'm sure Abby will continue the vein in a new venture as well.
Brilliant. I don't know if you've answered my question on that, Jason. You probably have, but is that is it more strands to it? But what inspires you?
Yeah, it is. It is. And hence my new avenue I'm going down, this all facing your fears. I really want to talk about my journey and my getting, helping me deal with my own anxieties. I'm currently writing a book, which I'm going to do while I'm off for a few weeks now over the summer.
Excellent.
To write my second book off. And it's all about facing your fears, isn't it? Because for me, I'm in a place now where I'm good, but I'm known now, but I'm influencing positively other people. Abby, she's gone down, she works with Mark Wilkinson and the life coaching. And my son Sam, who's had his own battles for a long time with mental health, he sort of turned the corner. And do you know what I'm doing now, finally? I'm not telling people what to do. I'm just showing them. I'd be the best version of myself, and people watch what I do and go, what are you doing? So, like I say, 3.5 years since I've stopped drinking, don't drink alcohol anymore. I look after myself a lot better. And I think hopefully now I've got my granddaughters, I'm going to be around for a lot longer and, be happy in the place I'm in now. And that's it for me.
Unfortunately, that's it. we've come to the end. And I think it's probably a really beautiful place to end as well, and as
thank
I said
you.
Really so much that we could talk about, but Abby, thanks for
thank
coming
you
on. Really appreciate it, and we'll obviously OneSHP will be sharing details of the website, and we'll be covering what you guys are up to, and see you soon. Thanks so much for coming
brilliant.
On Abby.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thanks,
thank
Mark.
You, mate.
Thank you. Bye.
Jason, thanks so much for coming on as well, mate. It's always a pleasure, and I appreciate as ever your candidness and what you're offering. I know people are going to take stuff away from this. So thanks again for coming on.
Just fine, mate. Thanks for the invite, mate. Anytime, Mark. Thank you.
Right, so that's, as I say, unfortunately, the end of the podcast. Again, a really fascinating one, probably one of the best ones I've done for a long time. It's just great to have Jason and Abby on. So, they continue to make a difference, and ultimately as well that they touch on helping people, which, regardless of health and safety or whatever you do, that's such an important thing. So to sort of wrap up now and go into more sort of material admin-y things, but just to wrap up, if you are new to the Safety Conversation podcast, please do go back to our hub of episodes, which I'll put a link below. You can check out all of the episodes we've got in our archive. Follow this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. We're also available apparently on the smart speaker. Simply ask to play the Safety Conversation. If you'd be really grateful if you could rate us and comment on your chosen platform, as that will help us get this show out to a wider audience, specifically something like today, which I'll be so really want to get out to people and make a difference. So, but please do stay tuned into shponline.co.uk for the very latest health and safety news, and you can also sign up to our e-newsletter. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again on the next episode.